This is the Graceful Atheist Podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. Happy New Year, and welcome to 2020. This is the first episode since we've taken a hiatus back in December. I'm very excited about and have many plans for the podcast for the next year. I have a number of authors lined up for interviews or interviews that I've already done. Other podcast hosts, including today's guest, Marie Delafont. Of course, we'll continue with deconversion stories, and I hope to do more of the 20 questions with believers. I have at least one of those interviews already done and ready to go. As usual, I would ask if you have the moment to take the time to go and rate and review the podcast in the Apple Podcast Store. That really helps other people discover the podcast. On to today's show. Today's guest is Marie Delafont. Marie burst on the scene about a year or so ago when she became the co-host of the Everyone's Agnostic podcast. Since then, she's gone on a number of different podcasts to tell her unique story of her personal deconversion, as well as the work that she does in the secular community. She is now the host of Everyone's Autonomous. In Marie's words, the new podcast takes off where Everyone's Agnostic left off. It is in particular looking at what happens now that you've gone through this faith transition and become a secular person. Everyone's Autonomous is much more focused on matters of justice. And here I think Marie has a unique voice and a unique perspective to speak into the atheist and secular communities. What drew me to Marie's story is her brutal self-honesty. We chat about that at the beginning of this episode, and she doesn't necessarily think that that describes her. I think it does. She has a vulnerability, an honesty, a directness that is very refreshing, and she lives up to that in this episode. And finally, Marie puts her money where her mouth is. Marie has given up her day job in order to become the manager of Dave Warnock. If you may recall, I have interviewed Dave Warnock a few episodes back, and Dave is dying of ALS. And his message of dying out loud is a really important one. So Marie has taken on a tremendous amount of work to become his manager and to set Dave up for various speaking engagements and podcast episodes. But again, it's indication of Marie living out the ideals that she proclaims. And without further ado, I give you Marie Delafont. Welcome to the Graceful Atheist Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm very excited to have you on. I'm a fan of yours. I started to hear about you from the Everyone's Agnostic podcast, but then I kind of followed along your story on various other podcasts where you've told your story. So I'm excited to have you on my podcast. Aww. To get to ask you some questions.
I think. Aww. Thanks.
For the, you know, the two people possibly out there who don't know who you are,
right?
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into some of your story.
Yeah, the major points about my present identity and work that I'm doing is that I am the former co-host of the Everyone's Agnostic show that was podcast that it was on for 5 years, and I was the co-host for the last year. And additionally, I am the manager for Dave Warnock. He is an individual who, he is a former pastor dying of ALS, and he's on a speaking tour talking about dying and living your life in the moment, and a very secular approach to living life mindfully and thoughtfully, and carpeing the fucking diem.
That's right. Absolutely.
So I'm constantly working on stuff for him, traveling with him. And then the third major part of what I'm doing right now is starting a new podcast, which is called Everyone's Autonomous. And it's going to be a fun adventure to keep on like telling people how to spell it and what the word means, because I don't think it's used regularly. But yeah, the show's coming out. The first episode, the pilot, is going to be released this Sunday. And then from there on, it's going to be a biweekly schedule on Thursdays for release. And we're going to be talking about how to regain control of certain things that maybe religion took away from us. Maybe we left religion behind, but a lot of those old tapes are playing out in our head and culture's reinforcing them. So it's going to be a very much in the street kind of like, let's talk about this kind of a show that I'm very excited for.
it's fair to say that the Everyone's Agnostic, both you and Cass, are known for just some brutal, brutal honesty.
That's more Cass than me. Like, I'm honest. I don't think I'm brutal.
Okay, he tends
to be brutal.
I think it's fair to say that's true of you as well.
Yeah.
I mean, and I,
okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah. Part of the ethos of this podcast is trying to show a little bit of vulnerability, to not just be the intellectual in the high tower who's impervious from the real world, but hey, we're human beings and exploring what it means to be a human being. So
yeah. I read your website through that kind of description of those three main themes that you have in your approach. And I loved that part, getting back to the humanity element.
I want to spend a lot of time talking about the new podcast, but let's kind of begin with your story growing up. How were you religious? Did you grow up in that?
Yeah, I sure did. I grew up in Minnesota. I'm still here in Minnesota, and grew up in a Lutheran church, and then eventually got involved in a Baptist church that my neighbor kid went to. And that Baptist church is more evangelical in nature, still very Midwestern, Scandinavian themed. Like, nobody's yelling at you that you're going to go to hell. Nobody's being slayed in the spirit. So nothing mystical like that, but still very much like you need to have a relationship with God. And also your vagina can get old and dirty if you use too much. Like, so I got fed the purity culture. So I grew up in that shit. I started having doubts when I was 13, but the indoctrination had done its damage, and I never felt safe to really explore those doubts, and basically just went through a traumatic decade or so of fighting and trying to brainwash myself and just really feeling gaslit. Got involved in missions. I signed up for YWAM, Youth with a Mission. It's something that Lauren Cunningham started, and it's terrible, and it's all across the globe, and it's a missionary training school. And so I did missionary training and lived in Mexico for 2 years doing that work. And then I found out that the boy that I liked started dating someone. So I thought, I don't think God wants me here anymore. So I went home, and then clearly, had more doubts. The doubts came back up, and they never went away. And eventually I shifted into more of an agnostic atheist perspective. And since then, it's been maybe 15 years now since I've fully deconverted, and spending a ton of time on the healing and the cleanup from that mess. And so that's kind of what got me involved in ultimately Everyone's Agnostic, and the stuff with Dave Warnock, and the stuff with the new show coming out.
Wow, a lot there to unpack. I do want to spend just a moment to talk about YWAM.
Ooh.
I have a number of friends who have been in YWAM, some of which are still very much believers and some of which are not. I never did. So I was never a part of that. But man, some of the stories sound a little cult-like. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. They isolate you. They encourage that you shouldn't reach out to your family while you're there. You're not supposed to date. You're not supposed to. It's very restrictive. Yeah. So I went off the deep end when I signed up for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I think that just the general person sitting in the pew might not know, or the deconvert, is that if you do a trip with YWAM, you have to fund yourself. You have to go raise all that money.
Well, no, God does.
Right.
God takes care of it.
Yes.
You just have to call your rich aunt and ask her to listen to God telling her to give you money.
Yes.
You peddle all of your rich friends back in the U.S. to get the money that God has for you to go to fucking China.
Right. So a friend of mine that I'm really hoping to have on the podcast at one point in time said he had this kind of moment of clarity when he was in Thailand speaking to a monk, and he just realized, what do I have to say to this person? I have no message that person doesn't already know that.
Yeah.
To use your term, that person is fully autonomous.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. They've made their choices. How do we get off thinking that we know what they need?
Yeah.
Like, it's not that I don't believe that I might have some insight for you in your life if you want to talk about it.
Sure.
But usually people don't want to talk about it.
Right.
And it's one thing to presume that someone needs something without even having met them, but you just show up on the street and you're like, hey, you need to know Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior. Like, that's just aggressive, and you're objectifying people.
Absolutely. You mentioned that you had doubts as early as 13. Would you say the root of those doubts was moral, intellectual, or something else, emotional?
Yeah, I was just talking about this earlier today because obviously I've been in this field of healing, of talking about healing from religion for a long time. And so I've heard all the stories. I've heard a lot of stories about folks that just come across a theological issue that they just can't contend with. The whole, like, can God be both all good, all knowing, and all present? And then that creates quite a problem logically that people can't work through and eventually end up leaving faith because of. However, for me, and I don't know whether to feel sheepish about it or proud about it, but at 13, I was like, why? Don't even start me with the whole Trinity or like trying to deconstruct any of those big concepts that you're trying to shove down my throat. Let's just start at why? Why any of this? Why? Right. Why God? Like, I need you to start there first. And nobody was going back to that very, very beginning foundation. Because without that, I don't know how to even debate you or how to pull apart any of these other elements that you're trying to convince me are the absolute truth. So that's what was happening when I was 13. Just why? Why? And like I said, I don't know if that's like a silly thing or just like very basic, but that was my thing. And I just kept on swimming in it and drowning myself in it to try to make it make sense. And it never, never, ever did. No surprise.
Yeah. And I understand that you were doing some forms of ministry, whether that was YWAM or something else.
Yeah.
Kind of after you had really figured out that you were struggling with your belief. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You mean when I was a YWAMer and an atheist?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Yes.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. When nobody answers why there's a God, yet you are swimming in Christianity, those doubts are going to keep coming back up because it's called cognitive dissonance. And so they would keep coming up and I'd keep on having these crises of faith. I'm using quotation marks, which were really just my intellect saying, hey, babe, like, none of this makes sense. You know that, right? And I would keep pushing it away because I'm like, I don't want to go to hell. But they kept on coming up and I would have these really terrible moments of like doubting everything and feeling like my life was on the line, which if your head thinks this is a matter of life and death, you're going to do the more conservative thing, which is to stay in the faith. Mm. And that is the structure of religion, that they implant terror in you. So much terror that you don't feel safe to leave.
Yeah.
To even question it. So that landed me in, well, I ended up doing YWAM in the first place to prove to God that I was really trying, because I thought it was my fault that this wasn't making sense, that I had some sin in my life or I wasn't passionate enough about God or in love with him enough. And so I thought, you know, if you really love God, you will move to another country, you'll tell people about it, you'll put yourself in really risky situations to go all out for God. And that's what I did. And it worked the first time I went, the first semester. And then I came back the next semester as staff and I had another faith crisis. And it was right after 9/11 as well. And so there's a lot of things going on in the global mindset at the time. And yeah, so I was an atheist for probably pretty much most of that semester as staff. And it was traumatic. Not even immense words. It was really traumatic because I don't mind talking about it, but it's hard to put into words because it was so horrible.
Right.
You know, I'm sitting there trying to think logically about things, but I'm feeling emotionally pulled away from it but being motivated by fear of death and eternal hellfire and internalizing shame and insufficiency about myself. And then in the meantime, I'm surrounded by people who are judging me and saying, maybe not overtly, but it is well known within the situation that I am a troublemaker. I'm not leaning on God. I've got some kind of spiritual baggage. I'm not an outcast, but I am an other. I am something that needs to be fixed. I'm broken. So I constantly felt broken within that context of when I was an atheist in YWAM. And so being judged by everyone, in addition to traveling around Mexico and translating these very sensational sermons to people, trying to get them to come to the front and convert and pray to accept Jesus. And in addition, like, the praise and worship is very sensational, just very like over the top, like woo, woo, woo. And they do that to manipulate your emotions and make you feel that good human feeling that you feel when you have music inside of you. And except they call it Jesus and they commandeered it. So just kind of being surrounded by that all the time was really toxic, and to be constantly questioned and gaslit, I'm realizing now, has put me in a place where I'm very, very sensitive to that. I don't like people questioning my choices. And if they do, I probably never forgive them. Because like, God damn it, I know what I'm doing. If you have some insight that you'd like to provide, you can ask if I'm okay, if I'm open to hearing what insight that you have, but do not second guess my choices, because I am a very conscious person. And I don't know, there's some wiggle room in there, right? But like, my point is just that it was terribly traumatic, all of this religion stuff. Like,
yeah.
And I think that's obviously clear why I've gotten into this realm of autonomy and like taking back your body, taking back your mind, and fighting the cultural and religious narratives that bind us up into behaviors that maybe we didn't sign up for.
Right. Wow. Again, a lot there. let me just say, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you.
You had to go through that. I can't imagine.
It was my choice. Ultimately, if I have to look back, I chose that, you know.
That's you owning your own responsibility, but the environment, the gaslighting, the shaming, that's not on you, right?
No, it's not.
And I think that's super common. And the other really common thing that you describe there is that desire to double down. When people have a faith and they start to see the cracks in that faith, start to doubt, a really natural response to that is, I'm going to redouble my efforts. I'm going to go on the mission trip. I'm going to give this much money. I'm going to read the Bible every day. I'm going to pray for 30 minutes every day,
yep,
et cetera. And these are delaying tactics in the long run, right? And it can be a very, very painful process.
Yeah.
And I just appreciate, again, your honesty in telling that story. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
And so you turned all of that energy of, and all of that effort of spreading the gospel into...
I see where you're going.
Yeah, here. You see where I'm going here. and turned that around. You've been a very active person in the, let's just say, secular activism.
Yeah.
How would you describe your work there?
I guess what I'm trying to do with the secular community and or anyone who listens and can benefit from these conversations, because I think this is a human issue, not just a religious issue. Mm-hmm. I think religion is a product of this part of humanity that we need to address. But I would say that I got involved initially to heal myself. Like, I don't believe in altruism. I'm not doing this for anyone else but me. There are side benefits in that other people are being encouraged and empowered by the things that we're talking about, but this is 100% for me. I want to talk about this. And yeah. I feel strong as fuck and empowered as fuck. And I finally feel some peace in regards to my relationships with other people, because I no longer feel the need to cling on to them, to control them, to find my worth in their appraisal of me. Mm-hmm. And so I've just found a lot of freedom to allow myself to be who I am and allow other people to be who they are as well. And so there's that internal psychological and sociological benefit to it. But in addition, I want to take this all like one step further. And I know I'm not answering your question anymore.
That's all right.
Well, no, it is actually still relevant. I think then it naturally and logically falls into, like, if we believe that we are autonomous, if we believe that there is no God and it's just us here, and that each of us should be able to make our own decisions for ourselves, then that means I am autonomous And if I am autonomous, that means that everyone else is autonomous too. And if that's true and that's what I believe, then I need to ask myself, what are the behaviors that I would be doing to reflect that reality or that belief? And mm-hmm. belief is the first step, right? Like, I align myself with the concept of autonomy. Now, how do I notice my behavior playing out in a way that infers to other people that I don't think that they have autonomy, or that I think that they should do what I tell them to do, which is not autonomy.
Right.
And so for me, I think that just that base belief in autonomy in this universe leads me into this humanistic approach of empowering folks. And it leads me into conversations about social justice because racism, misogyny, white supremacy, when I distill all that stuff, what I hear is we are oppressing these people. We are stripping them from their autonomy. We are projecting our racism and narrowed views of these people onto them and restricting the way that they can live their lives. And that is an autonomy problem. That is a white people problem if we're talking about white supremacy there. And I feel like these conversations we've had about our past and our past religious upbringing are helpful and they're validating. And I think that there's a next step that maybe I'm not seeing as much of. And that is that, like, boots on the ground, rubber meets the road. Now, how do we live?
Right.
Now, how do we live in this world? How, I'm not asking people to disregard or get over, we don't get over religious trauma. I will never be over religious trauma. And I'm going to continue to move forward into, like, what then is going on in this world?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Because when I have some space away from processing the religious trauma, now then, okay, so since none of that is real, what's going on? And how do I want to live? And what do I want to do with this life? And what do I believe about life? And how do I find my happiness? And those used to be really scary questions for me, and lots of therapy and some drugs, pot has helped, enlightened me and given me a better sense of the universe around me, and or just a comfort with the discomfort.
Okay.
Of not knowing what the fuck is going on and how this came out of some stars over, you know, a couple of days. Like, now I'm here.
Yeah.
And like, blows my mind. And I'm just trying to figure out what to do with that new reality emotionally and practically. And I think that's what I'm trying to do in my activism and in the secular communities. I'm trying to take it a little bit away from the venting and the validate me stuff, which is still super important, and shift it into, okay, I've been heard. I understood what happened. How do I resolve this? How do I move forward? How do I make some serious, real shifts in my mind, in my behavior, and in my relationships? How do I affect change? And how do I unzip more things? Because the one thing that we all have in common as ex-Christians or ex-religious people is that we unzipped one thing.
Yeah, right.
One thing. And then I show up in the community and I find out that there are many, many people with many, many more things to unzip. There's a lot of misogyny in the atheist activism community that has been very disappointing for me to see. And at the same time, it is what it is. And I think that's also why I want to have these additional conversations about what else. Good job. Good job.
Yeah. Let's move forward. Yeah.
Throwing away Jehovah.
Yeah.
Let's also now throw away heteronormativity. And let's throw away transphobia, and let's keep moving. Let's keep unzipping these things.
Right.
So that's how I see what I do.
Do you think that humanism is the right bucket to describe that kind of, because what you're describing is an active morality, right? You're defining a set of moral values. What do you call that?
I don't know.
All right. Okay.
I don't know. I haven't done any research into the actual definition of humanism. I have a general sense of it, so I can't really literally tell you if that's what that is or not. I haven't really given it a name. I really just use the word autonomy a whole lot.
Okay.
That informs literally everything. I really shouldn't be interviewed. I really shouldn't have any attention at all because I only have one thing to say and I just say it in a million different ways in a million different contexts. It's all fucking autonomy. Just put it on a tattoo.
Yes.
On your finger. Like, that is my guiding light.
Some of my deconversion happened simultaneously with our political changes over the last several of years, although some of it predates that as well.
Yeah.
But my naivete was shattered, especially through the 2016 election. But even some other events like Colin Kaepernick, if you're familiar with him, but he's the the quarterback of the 49ers, who just has been blackballed entirely. And I remember just having conversations with people where, you know, they were upset. He knelt during the national anthem. And I was like, well, how would you want him to protest?
You
know,
that's right.
He's pointing out, you know, here's a problem within the community that he's a part of. How would you want him to do that? What I'm trying to get across is I think your message, the points that you're bringing out are important because it is easy to be complacent. It's easy to not, I'm not affected directly by these things.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to just ignore them as they affect other people.
Yeah.
And it's important for us if we, as a secular person, if we say that, you know, morality or humanism or whatever title you put on that is important to us, that we recognize the harm that's being done to other people and we have some active part in making that better.
That's right. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I just feel like a lot of, whenever I come into atheist circles, it's mostly older white men.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't see enough conversations there about these other social justice issues. And I would love to see that, those kinds of themes penetrating those groups and more growth in those spaces and more discussions about humanism. Because I'm just pontificating. I'm pulling this out of my ass right now. But I think that like when someone settles into atheism, whether they were always atheist or whether they're an ex-Christian, there's an amount of pride and self-satisfaction that you can find and maybe hang out in for a while and feel a strong sense of identity with being quote unquote right, because you're so much smarter than all these idiots in quotations that are talking to their imaginary friends and killing other people because of it. And I think I was there. I speak that way because I was there. I felt self-righteous in a way because, I mean, it was a very big shift. I give myself credit for moving forward out of that. And I think I became dissatisfied with myself and just finding that to be like, well, at least I'm not a Christian. And that wasn't a robust enough worldview for me to just be happy that I'm not a Christian.
Right. Yeah.
Like I just kind of wanted to take it to the next logical step and kind of reorient myself into a new understanding of reality, creating a new framework, I think.
I've described it this way. You have your doubts, you work through those, you come to some conclusion that what you have been told was not true. You've gained all this new knowledge and you've got maybe some trauma that you're working through. You've got a lot of emotion about that. So of course you're angry. Of course you're going to go on Twitter and lash out, you know? But the flip side of that is, like I say about myself, I can't say that believers are stupid, or I'm saying that I was stupid and I suddenly gained IQ points when I went through this transition, right?
Yes.
I am the same human being that I was then.
Yes.
And there's lots of evidence that suggests that smart people are just better at fooling themselves. And there's tendency, particularly in the atheist community, particularly new atheists, however you want to describe that, of just being focused on the arguments, asserting dominance through argumentation and debate.
Yeah.
And I think where I feel some brother sisterhood here is that you know, I'm very much interested in what now.
Yeah.
I've gone through the angry phase. I've done the research. I'm confident in my secular worldview and in the science and evidence. But the human part of that is really very, very important still. And
yeah,
I find like the message to believers in my life is a hard one. It's like, give up all this comfort and, you know, the sense of someone watching out for you and go it alone. Like, that's a hard message.
Not a very good marketing twist.
Exactly.
No.
So I feel like we, as the secular community, have an obligation to build community, to start building a sense of morality, to do what you're doing. And this is my transition. Sorry, I've talked too much, but
no.
You have really put your money where your mouth is in that you have begun work with Dave Warnock. I understand you've given up a job.
I quit my job last month, yeah.
So tell me how that came about and, you know, how's that going for you?
Yeah, well, I think it would make sense to start by saying that one of the most traumatic things about leaving religion for me was the adjustment to death. Mm. It is ongoing, an adjustment for me. It is, out of all the things that I have reclaimed and that I feel like I've gotten back my sense of identity and my sense of self, what remains and what I'm presently working on is that fear of death, the sense of aging, I'm 37. Like
you're a young spring chicken.
I know. Like, I know all these things that we say back and forth to each other. Like, you're a young spring chicken. We say all these weird things, and I don't want to feel that way about age. I just want to be alive, and until I'm dead. But I'm carrying so much trauma around the message of death being the enemy, about over association with myself, my being, and so many years in denial of death. I was going to die. In fact, I expected to die as a missionary. I expected to be a martyr, literally. And it was still scary. It was still scary to think about dying as a Christian, but at least you are never really, really dead. Adjusting to the truth of my aging and of there being things in life that I can't control that will make me hurt, like suffering or any kinds of health issues that I might have come up. Doctors can't fix everything. And so I've had a pretty bad panic disorder and anxiety disorder that I believe is stemmed in that. This terror around dying and adjusting to the truth of that. Whereas I believe that if I were taught about death and dying as a real thing without any heaven to comfort me as a kid, I might have damn well adjusted a lot better. Instead, I'm in my late 20s saying, oh, I guess I'm going to die. And I've heard a lot of people feel the same way about that. Some of them have gotten over it. Some of them, it's pushed them into a carpe the fucking diem perspective, and they live a life that feels a lot more full. For me, it makes me even more anxious. I'm like, oh, fuck. I only have one life left, and I'm already 38. God damn. And I feel like I'm playing some kind of game where these little rays are going to come and, like, blow up my head, and I have to, like, click them. It just feels like this. It feels tense. It feels tense. And I feel terror about aging. And
interesting.
Yeah. And it's, I feel silly about it, and I think it's a very common experience, and
I think it's a human reaction.
I think it's human, yeah, and I want to be in that. I don't want to deny it anymore. I want to say, yes, I'm going to die. Yes, I'm terrified. Yes, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this shit, but I'm going to show up each day and deal with reality instead of making up some kind of a lie that makes me feel better. So I've been working on it. I haven't made a whole lot of headway. I was like, how do you reconcile with death? How do you do it? And well, thanks, Dave. He got ALS and real buddy helping me out. I had known him. I met him in October 2018 at the first Everyone's Agnostic Retreat in East Tennessee, and didn't like him because he's a Southerner, and on average, Southerners seem to be a little bit more like honey, sweetie, here, I'm going to give you a kiss on the cheek. There's different cultural expectations. And I'm much more like, you can touch me when I say you can.
Yes.
And he like hugged me and gave me a kiss on the cheek, which like we don't even do ever in Midwestern culture. And I was just like, I didn't actively hate him. I was just like, that's really presumptuous. Yeah. And, but I adore him. He's adorable. I love him.
Yeah.
And so then I was going to go down to Tennessee in March to hang out with Cass for a bit. And it was at the same time that Dave got this diagnosis of ALS the week before I was going to go down there. And so I was like, I know. I was like, God damn, like this feels inappropriate for me to go because there's this tight community in Tennessee of atheists. And this guy is just finding out he's going to die. And I'm going to go down there and be like, hey guys, I didn't know what to do or what to say. So I just decided before I even went, I was like, I'm just going to let him take the lead. Like I decided I believe that everyone should die how they want to die. Like they should set the tone for the death instead of everyone else around them projecting onto them how they see death playing out. So I wanted him to signal to us how he's dealing with it. So for the first few days, I kept my mouth shut and I just watched. I just watched to see what he was doing. And I saw he was him. By now, the community knows what Dave is. And he was just him. Yeah. He's just sweet and open and vulnerable and positive and encouraging and silly. And we joke about death all day long, Dave and I. And sometimes I forget that people don't know that, like, don't know our dynamic. And so we'll be out together and I'll be teasing him about dying. And, like, people around me will be like,
horrified, pearl clutching.
Yes. Like, are we supposed to laugh at that? I'm like, is it funny? Yes. So, yes. Yeah. He got contacted by the Final Exit Network, which is an organization that facilitates people's end of life options.
Okay.
And they want to connect with him on some opportunities. And so I had to like think twice about saying this joke to Dave. I was like, hey, maybe if you collaborate with them, they'll give you one free death. Yeah. I don't know. It's not a very good joke, but like.
The reason I feel comfortable laughing is that, you know, you facilitated having Dave on this podcast.
Yeah.
And I know that a part of his sense of humor is embracing the reality and saying, fuck it anyway. You know, this is what's going to happen. And
yeah,
carpe the diem.
There's so many opportunities for jokes in death. Like it's death is hilarious. There's so many funny opportunities for jokes. And and it was very clear once I hung out with Dave, okay, he is game for joking about this. Okay. Yeah. Yes. And I heard him, you know, the way he's processing it. And then inside of me, I'm like, God, I'm so scared of death. And there's something going on with this man. Like the way that he's processing this and talking about this, like more people need to hear him. Mm-hmm. And so that week I was like, dude, do you want to like get onto some podcasts? Like I know people now from being on Everyone's Agnostic, I could like probably get you hooked up with someone. And he's like, sure, that'd be fun. And
yeah.
So then I just became his manager and I got him on a bunch of podcasts and that eventually took off. And then he got down to Texas and he's been on Matt Dillahunty's show a couple of times. He's been on Talk Heathen with Eric Murphy. So he's moving up in the world of dying people. Like, I don't know if that's a competitive field, but
I described it as the world podcast tour that he was on. So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very exciting for me because like, and this is kind of fun for me to talk about because this has not been a subject that not that I don't want to talk about, but sure. No one's asked and I haven't been interviewed about it. But I feel like that what I'm going through is very unique and interesting as well as his manager and as someone who is terrified of dying.
Right.
It's been extremely healing to work with him and to be face to face with death every day.
Right.
And when we travel, I usually travel with him probably 80% of the time when we go places. And to see that happening, especially to see other people relating to him and feeling the same way that I do about like, yeah, I left religion and that's great. And now I can drink caffeine and have sex. but also I'm really scared of dying. And who is talking about that?
Right.
Especially someone with authority, and Dave is dying. So that that gives him some amount of authority on the topic. And he has some really encouraging, beautiful things to say. And so I immediately was like, dude, you're autonomous. And I'm offering myself to you as a volunteer to get you out there, because I think you have something beautiful to say. And so it just kind of took a life of its own. And I think that has to do with him. What he's talking about is something that people need to hear. I don't think it's anything. I don't think he'll tell you this too, but I don't think he's anyone especially unique. He says all the time, he's like, you wouldn't know how you would deal with it until it happens to you. Like,
Yeah.
I think when he talks, he wants people to know not to look up to him, but to see what it is that we see in him is in us. I think that's the crux, a lot of what he's saying. Like, this is in you to make these choices for your life too. Like, hear what I have to say and then get back into your life and live it to the fullest.
Yes.
And I am extremely motivated by that. And you can't hang out with Dave Warnock for too long without quitting your job.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was already really unhappy with what I was doing, and I was making a ton of money, and cliche, right? But money doesn't make you happy. I had enough that should make me happy, but I wanted time. I wanted time back. I wanted connection back. I wanted meaning back. I wanted autonomy back. I didn't want to have to punch in. I woke up late this morning, dude, because I had a hangover. I stayed out late last night and had a good time. But I've been working my ass off since I got over the hangover, like at my desk at home. I love this autonomy. And this is the life that I want to live. I want to live a life that empowers other people, and a life that is focused on my autonomy and expressing my boundaries and respecting other people and trying to make humanity a little bit more functional in some way. And yeah, so I fucking quit my job.
You know, when you go through deconversion, one of the things, and you've described the terror of this, but one of the things that you go through is you recognize the finiteness of your own human life. And there is, it makes things more beautiful. It makes things, because of their finiteness, they're more important.
Yeah.
My time with my kids, my time with my wife, your friends, your extended family, the people that you meet, all of that becomes richer and deeper as you realize that there's a limited time on this. And I think what Dave's message is that it's just more imminent for him. We all know intellectually that there'll be an end.
Yeah.
Dave knows, within a year or so of when that's going to be for him.
Yes.
And so it's just bright lines all around for him. And so what's so powerful about his message is just what you just said. There's nothing special about him.
Yeah.
We're all living that out. And if we recognize the beauty of the life around us, our lives can be that much richer.
That's right. And it's important for me to say that, like, sometimes those realizations will lead you into living a life that feels richer. Like, at this point in my life, that's what this is doing for me. Mm-hmm. But before, I was also aware of the temporary state of our being, and it filled me with terror. Like,
right.
So I think that there's probably going to be several manifestations of that. Like, there's the carpe the fucking diem, where you luxuriate in the being of now, because you value the now, and you know nothing is promised to you, and that feels good somehow. But then there's the other one that's just like, oh shit, like, Now is gone. Oh, I can never have that now gone back. It's gone. And it's just this constant state of grief and loss and mourning and things being taken away from you. So I also am super interested in that transition from that clinging to life and the clinging to moments and that neuroticism that I come from into what I'm starting to shift into. And it kind of wavers back and forth, but just like that moment where I can take a breath and like, holy shit, I'm having a conversation about death and dying right now. And that is beautiful. And it's an honest human conversation. And what else could you want from life other than to connect to other people and talk about things that matter and to ask the big questions and to sit in the big unknown?
Yeah.
I mean, that is satisfying shit right there. But then there's other times where I have panic attacks because, like, I got another gray hair or something. But yeah. I'm going to have to work through that. Like, that's what I committed to doing that about 5 years ago. I said, either I work through this or I don't. And either way, I'm going to die. So let's try working through this.
Yes.
Yeah. How far we can get before I run out of time.
You were the co-host on Everyone's Agnostic for about a year or so. And just wanted to say thank you to both of you guys for the work that you guys did.
Thanks.
I think I pinged you guys on Twitter recently to just say thank you.
You did. Thank you.
And congratulations for all of that work.
Thanks.
What's great about that is it gives you kind of a springboard to work into the thing that you are the most interested in. So
yeah,
tell us about the new podcast, what the impetus for that is, and let's.
I just want to say I feel extremely privileged that I am starting my show. I haven't even released a fucking episode yet, and I already have 7 Patreons. Like, what the fuck? What kind of fucking world do I live in right now? I feel so honored and so privileged, and to use Everyone's Agnostic as a springboard and to be able to wave at those listeners and be like, hey, if you want to come and join me, I'll be over here. Like, that's a huge push off. And I feel so privileged for that. And I hope to do well by it. So the show, I mean, I obviously don't want to repeat myself because I kind of talked about it a little bit throughout this interview, but basically the way I describe it is that it picks up where Everyone's Agnostic left off. Everyone's Agnostic was generally proportionately more focused on going through those stories of deconversion or those stories of indoctrination, basically the arc of, okay, religion's here and now religion's gone. And how does that feel? And then kind of playing around a little bit in the areas of how now are we living? What are we struggling with? What have we made with our lives? So like a little bit of that. And personally, those stories matter so much. And when I'm shifting now, it's not because they don't matter. I just think that there's a lot of shows doing that.
Sure.
I mean, there's your show.
This being one of them, yes.
Yeah, your show, Steve Hilliker's show, like Luke King, his show. Well, no, it's Stephanie that's running it. But there's a lot of shows that are covering those stories, and they're so important. And they're an important thing to have during that period of your life where you're deconverting and you're still working through that gaslighting narrative in your head. And so I'm glad those are there, and I'm glad that EA is going to stay in the archive. And I want to focus on what I'm interested in, which is kind of like I mentioned, the practicality, the emotional practicality of now there is no God. So how does that change how you interact with other people?
Yeah.
Now there is no God. How does that change the kinds of relationship structures that you choose to be in? Now that there's no God, how does that change what you see happening in Syria? And it's going to be a really weird show because like at some points we're going to be talking about non-monogamy, and at some points we're going to be talking about climate change, and at other points we're going to talk about transphobia or the different ways of looking at gender. I want to talk about colonization, which is a new theme that's really sticking out to me, and white supremacy and how to be an ally and like all sorts of fucking shit, but always kind of through the lens of, okay, we're restructuring our understanding of this world in this purely secular humanist point of view. I hung out with someone yesterday who's a big fan of the show that has not yet been released. And they're like, so at what point are you going to be talking about Kant and talking about autonomy and Kant? And I'm like, nope.
Yeah. Yes.
Nope. We're not going to be talking about philosophy like that. I want to talk about I don't know about the word real, but like practical shit, how to manage your relationships, how to think about things differently. I really want to get into those practical steps, and I want to get challenged. I'm afraid of the show because I am going to purposely seek out things that I find uncomfortable for me. And I've realized that that's going to create opportunity for me to sound like an idiot, but I agree to that because I want to be challenged. I strongly believe that we shouldn't be afraid of being wrong, Because if you're afraid of being wrong, you're going to hold on to less than truthful things. And or when it's pointed out to you that you're wrong, you're going to attack someone or internalize your worth based on your being wrong. And I want to encourage people to do their best to know as many true things as possible, as few false things as possible, like Dillahunty says, and just do their best. And when they know better, do better. Like Dave says, you know, so I'm not going to touch on Kant, but I'll probably quote a Dillahunty or a Warnock a few times.
Yeah. You know, I think that's really fascinating. You know, when I first came into the secular community, of course I was interested in philosophy just because I'm a geek. That was kind of some of my history. The thing I learned right off the bat was I was hopelessly outclassed. Do you know what I mean? Like I realized my conception of what philosophy was this tiny little thing. And like, there are people out there doing it so much better than I ever could that, you know, I'm just going to consume their content. And I realized, you know, the thing that I can do is focus on the human aspect. How does this play out? And so in many ways, that sounds like what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
What I do want to expound on, though, is the word autonomous.
Yeah.
You made a joke about having to tell people how to spell it. But what does it mean to you? And then I have just a couple of things I want to throw in as well.
Sure. Yeah. So dictionary wise, you know, autonomy means the right to self-govern. And typically when you Google such a word, you'll come across articles that reference states, countries. It's a political word when used in English. Typically it's related to political things. And it's their right to govern themselves and to not be intruded upon by other countries in terms of telling them what to do with their money, what to do with their people, that kind of thing. So countries are autonomous generally. But the word also applies to individuals, that I as an individual am autonomous. I have the right to self-govern. What is myself? And governing means you get to make choices for yourself, but it also means that everything that's inside of you belongs to you, in such that when I say that, I mean your feelings. Mm-hmm. Someone hurts your feelings, they didn't make you feel sad. You feel sad.
Okay.
And so when we talk about autonomy, I think that ends up informing the kinds of relationships that we have and the words that we use in those relationships. Because right now, it's really normal in culture to say, you hurt me. You made me feel jealous. You make me feel insecure. And that language does not align with reality. Nobody can make you feel anything unless they inject you with some kind of a drug that's like a hallucinogen. They might make you have a hallucination, but when it comes to interacting with people, they don't make you feel anyway. And so using a term like autonomy can inform you that the feelings that you have are your own, that they belong to you. You cannot ask other people to own your feelings. And so if you have an issue or a feeling or something, you is on you to figure out how you're going to manage it, how you're going to respond to it. If whatever they did was so egregious and you're just lost beyond belief, it is now your responsibility to sever that relationship. Mm-hmm. Autonomy means that I can do what I want to with my body. I can include other people if they consent. It means that autonomy, for me, helps me interact with other people because I stop trying to control other people or make them say things that I want them to say. I am now motivated by knowing the will of other people in my life. I am now motivated to know, what are your boundaries? I don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. I want to know who you are, what you're good for, what you don't want to do, not in a way to judge you, but so I can see you.
Yeah.
So I can see you and I can honor that because I am the same. I am also autonomous. I want you to know who I am and respect my boundaries and my interests. And so then it's like, it's a dumb metaphor, but it's like playing Go Fish. Like, I've got a king and a queen. Do you have a king and queen? You're like, well, I just have a king. And I'm like, okay, well, here, let's match the kings. And so it's this healthier back and forth where I'm not put out. that you don't have a queen. You just fucking don't.
Yeah.
I can't control whether you have a queen or not. And it is unrealistic to expect that I could badger you into, why don't you ever do this? Why don't you say this? Why don't you go here?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to.
Yes.
And that might be disappointing and that might hurt. Yep.
Yeah.
So what are you, the one who feels those feelings, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to respond to yourself and make behaviors and choices that align with how you feel? And so the concept of autonomy really drives me in terms of interpersonal relationships and social justice issues. Because if I have autonomy, then so do you. And right. So I want to behave in a way that constantly acknowledges the autonomy or proactively seeks to witness the autonomy of someone, to advocate for the autonomy of someone, to seek out consent from someone for an issue around their autonomy. I always ask people before I hug them because that's touching their body. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to be touched. And so I seek that information out. I seek to know their boundaries by asking for consent around issues of autonomy for their body. And so autonomy, this whole concept just feeds right into that. And it feeds how I see people, how I interact with people, and how I release people to be who they are. And I focus on my space and who I am and the boundaries that I have for myself, because this is my little country here of my body. And I don't apologize for making boundaries around things that belong to me. This is my autonomous range right here.
Right.
And so it's super exciting to like look for the autonomy in others.
Right.
Can I give you a hug? Do you like to hug? Not like, oh, you know what drives me crazy? When people go up to you and they're like, and you're gonna shake their hand, and yeah, they go like this, they open their arms, they're like, I'm a hugger, they say. And they go in and you're like, well, I'm so happy that you're a hugger. You're forcing me. You're assuming, you're saying that since I'm a hugger, then you need to take my hug.
Yes.
Like, it seems like a silly, stupid thing, right? Like a hug, but it spreads out to so many bigger things. And then don't even get me started on Me Too stuff, because that's the crux of this, that yeah, we suck. We suck at these conversations about seeking out consent and navigating these really complex things like sexuality. Engaging in sexual contact or whatever you want to call it with someone requires a lot of communication,
right,
and seeking out of consent and establishing boundaries. And we suck. We suck at that. And so that is autonomy right there. Like, it's communication. It's being proactive. It's witnessing and honoring the autonomy of other people. You know, that's my jam. That
awesome.
Is my fucking jam.
Autonomy has always been an important concept for me as well. And if you will forgive me a moment of being the super vanilla, boring dad for a second,
Yeah.
My kids, one of which as a toddler, parents have these irrational fears. Like, so you give them a binky, the little sucker thing, you know, and you think, oh God, it's going to ruin them. So you're trying to take them away.
Yeah.
As a toddler, she would hoard binkies no matter what we did, and we would find like this stash behind her crib, right?
Yeah.
And it was asserting her autonomy. Now, now she's a teenager and she's asserting her autonomy. And every time she rolls her eyes at me, and there's part of me that gets angry, right? Like, obviously, yeah, but then I remember like, man, she's becoming an adult. She is her own person. She's, she also does not love hugs. So just all of this reminded me of her.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that, while being frustrated as a parent, I'm also simultaneously just so proud of her for becoming the young woman that she is becoming and asserting her dominion over her body and her space. And it's just so exciting. So, and how this ties into the deconversion story is, I think there's a lot of the ignoring of other people's autonomy within a religious context. You mentioned church too, obviously in that scenario with the purity culture and the abuse from mostly male pastors and things of that nature. But in general, just women's bodies are there for the hugging, right? Like there is no sense of that autonomy. Women are suppressed from leadership or suppressed we don't need to rehash all of it, but obviously there, you know, there's a lot of the removal of autonomy from certain people within the religious context. And so when you lose that baggage, when you let go of that baggage and you start to recognize the full humanity, the complete autonomy of another human being, and just gaining the full respect for that person and their boundaries and what they love and what they hate and all the things you've just described. Anyway, I just think it's an amazing concept. I love what you're doing with it. I think that's a really interesting topic and framework to go about having a podcast.
I'm pretty fucking stoked about it. It's been difficult. It's you know, I'll tell people that it's difficult to move into that. Like if you come from a narrative of like codependence or like these like highly connective, we'll just say codependence. If you come from that background, it's really, 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 really fucking hard to shake it off. Yeah. Like I'm still working on it. But I think this journey of embracing the concept of autonomy and making that like basically the guiding light for me has changed me in ways I never imagined. So like, for example, I look at my partner that I'm with, who I've been with since 2010, when we entered into the relationship and just kind of like this, we went up the escalator. We just did what we were supposed to do. We got married, we've been together, et cetera. But this language around autonomy has shifted how we see each other. Right. Like I don't really like to call him my husband anymore because I prefer to see the relationship as a daily opt-in. Like I don't like the idea of like intending to stay together for a long time or promising to stay together for a long time or for that to be our goal above anything else. I like the relationship to stay for as long as it makes sense and that it's healthy for each other. And so each day I wake up and if he's still here, I'm like, yes, like, yes, because I totally dig you too. Yeah, and people are like, what, you do too? You're still into me? Yeah, cool. Yeah. So like every day we're getting married all over again. Like we're opting into this relationship and it feels so good. And I'm not, you know, I don't try to control him anymore or cling to him. Like when I talk about our future, I'm like, you know, if we're still together, I don't ever want to presume anything. And, but it feels richer. Like it feels a lot richer that way to know that it's an opt-in relationship with no expectations, yet it works and we are together and happy.
Yeah.
And that's just like one example of how autonomy has shifted the framework of a lot of my relationships into a way that feels a lot healthier and satisfying.
That's amazing. So Marie, let the people know how they can get in touch with you. So where can they find the podcast and how
ESP? Just
yes, talk to my yes.
Pray to me. Those are funny jokes. I'm good at jokes. Yeah, you can find me on everyonesautonomous.com, or you can search for the show. I'm on all major podcast platforms right now. And there's only one show out right now. It's a stupid little 1 minute teaser that I made with my editor that just makes me laugh. But the show itself will actually be coming out on November 10th, which I imagine will already be now once the show is released, not knowing what your turnover timetable is.
Yeah, for sure. It will be out by the time you're hearing this.
Awesome. And we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and that whole spiel.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Marie, thank you so much for sharing your time and your story.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Final thoughts on the episode. As expected, Marie is an incredibly honest and vulnerable and direct person. She truly came to the podcast and lived up to the idea of an honesty contest. I particularly appreciate Marie's discussion of an existential crisis, the idea of being aware of one's finiteness, that life isn't forever, and our discussion about aging and the real fear that she experiences around that. I thought that was really quite refreshing and then powerful that she does all this work with Dave Warnock, who has ALS. So she's confronted by this, the idea of death, on a daily basis. The new podcast, Everyone's Autonomous, is amazing. I have listened to a few of the episodes. The first episode is just gut-wrenching, the story of a woman named Erin, and the power and the vulnerability of the stories that Marie is going to be able to tell and elicit from her guests is just going to be amazing. So again, for the two or three people who don't know who Marie Delafant is, please go check out Everyone's Autonomous. I want to thank Marie for coming on the podcast, for sharing her story, again, being so vulnerable and honest. I also want to thank her for setting up the conversation I had with Dave Warnack a few months ago. And the work that she's doing there is just amazing. As I mentioned in the intro, I have a number of exciting interviews either done or lined up for 2020. I have hopes to be able to interview more authors, more Christians, more believers. I'd be really interested in diversifying. If you are a person of color who has gone through a faith transition, I would really like to hear from you. If you work in the humanist field, if you've written a book, if you have a podcast, I'm very interested in hearing from you. If you're a believer, I'm really very, very interested in talking with you. I have had a number of conversations that have been very fulfilling, and I'd like to see that continue in 2020. I hope you'll join me this year as we do exciting things with the Graceful Atheist podcast. Time for some footnotes. The song is a track called Waves by Micaiah Beats. Please check out her music. Links will be in the show notes. If you'd like to help support the podcast, here are the ways you can go about that. First, help promote it. The podcast audience grows by word of mouth. If you found it useful or just entertaining, please pass it on to your friends and family. Post about it on social media so that others can find it. Please rate and review the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This will help raise the visibility of our show. Join me on the podcast. Tell your story. Have you gone through a faith transition? You want to tell that to the world? Let me know and let's have you on. Do you know someone who needs to tell their story? Let them know. Do you have criticisms about atheism or humanism, but you're willing to have an honesty contest with me? Come on the show. If you have a book or a blog that you want to promote, I'd like to hear from you. Also, you can contribute technical support. If you are good at graphic design, sound engineering, or marketing, please let me know and I'll let you know how you can participate. And finally, financial support. There will be a link on the show notes to allow contributions, which would help defray the cost of producing the show. If you want to get in touch with me, you can Google Graceful Atheist, or you can send email to gracefulatheist@gmail.com. You can tweet at me at gracefulatheist, or you can just check out my website at gracefulatheist.wordpress.com. Get in touch and let me know if you appreciate the podcast. Well, this has been the Graceful Atheist podcast. My name is David, and I am trying to be the Graceful Atheist. Grab somebody you love and tell them how much they mean to you. This has been the Graceful Atheist Podcast.